I'm thinking that just as the seven represents divine completeness, so the ten would just represent the perfect completeness. Wouldn't just have to be ten.
Yeah.
The complete. Whatever, how many powers there were.
Yes, well, that's a thought. I've never been prone to give much significance to numbers. I always felt in Revelation that numbers are just numbers. There's the 12 apostles and 144,000 saints, and there are seven churches and so on. But I think that that seven, as it is used in the scriptures, certainly if any figure is a symbol of completeness and of divinity and so on, I think that would be it. But I think for the most part in Revelation numbers are numbers. The details are the other aspects are shown by various details of the visions that you see. Well, now getting on with the episode here, we left off with the war in heaven and the woman being cast out and the dragon being cast out and the stars were being cast out from heaven, and only the man-child was left there, this who as God. He's the only one in the heavens now, that is, in the ecclesiastical realm, as it were. I guess we better read on a little bit more. Starting at the 10th verse, I believe, would somebody read to the 14th verse, 10 to 14. Brother Wiener, do you have it there, please?
And I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, "Now the salvation and power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of this Christ have come, for the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down, who accuses them day and night before our God. And they have conquered him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, for they loved not their lives even unto death. Rejoice then, O heaven, and you that dwell therein, but woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you in great wrath, because he knows that his time is short. And when the dragon saw that he had been thrown down to the earth, he pursued the woman who had borne the male child. But the woman was given the two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly from the serpent into the wilderness, to the place where she is to be, to the place where she is to be nourished for a time and time and half a time. The serpent poured water."
Well, that's far enough for now. Now, when does this take place? Let's find ourselves chronologically. We had the dragon fighting in heaven, and we had Michael fighting in heaven, and there was a struggle going on. There's nothing said about the woman fighting. She didn't fight. But when did this take place, and when did the war end in heaven? When was the dragon cast out, do you think?
Brother Hummel? That would be between AD 800 and 1799.
AD what?
800.
800, that's right. Yeah, that would be about the time of Charlemagne, is when the triumph of the church was complete. There's no question after Charlemagne's time as to who was who in the Roman Empire. The emperor from that time and forward was crowned and uncrowned by the Pope. There were exceptions too, but I think for the most part the popes were the ones that were recognized as having the the supreme authority. They were head over the whole Roman Empire. He was God on earth, as it were, and the emperors so viewed him. That was the time in which the triumph of the church was complete. This man-child prevailed. All right, and then when the dragon lost its battle, you'll find a paradox here now. You'll find it in the next chapter, in the 13th chapter, that the dragon gives his seed and his great authority unto the leopard-like beast. Doesn't say anything about a war there, but they're not contradictory. They're just showing different things. We must look at this thing from a spiritual standpoint too. We know what has been taking place. At first, what was Satan's first move with Christianity? His first desire was to crush it, wasn't it? He tried to crush our Lord. It was he that had our Lord crucified. He tried everything to quench the early church. He persecuted them. He did everything, but because the Lord interfered, he wasn't able to subdue Christianity. And so when he found that he couldn't lick it, as the saying goes, why then he was wise in the wisdom of this world, so he decided to join it. That's the proverbial saying that they have, if you can't lick it, join it. And that's what he did. And that was by far more successful. When he joined it as an influential member, and he could rule it that way for a time. But then the civil powers finally found that even by joining it, they couldn't rule it. They finally wound up a complete loss from the standpoint of the civil powers exercising dominion in the church. Now, when he was cast out, when he found that he couldn't any longer preside over the councils and make the decisions for the church, about that time, you see, the church, the papacy was triumphant, and a great proclamation is made. It says, "And I heard a voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God night, day and night." There is a counterfeit of the true reign of Christ. Now, we know this is a counterfeit. I feel very strong that this is this way, because in the first place, when the true reign of Christ takes place, will the woman be in the wilderness? No. When this proclamation is made, remember, at the same time, the church flees into the wilderness for 1260 years. So we know exactly when the starting point was of this matter. It really started in 539, when the woman she lost her place in the heavens. About that time, remember, under Justinian, Arianism was subdued, and from there you'll find that the woman class, the right-hearted among the church groups, had to flee into the wilderness, the separation. And this proclamation might have even been made in 539. I mean, we can't necessarily put our finger on it. There's no question about it in 800. But even in 539, the Pope became the universal head of the church. And he was proclaimed so by Justinian. So it may have even started there, and then your parallel will be complete. Starting at 539, the woman was cast into the wilderness. She had to flee into the wilderness. The dragon recognized the complete sovereignty of the Pope in all religious matters. And then it is that the dragon is found on earth. He's come down to the earth having great wrath. But is there any indication in history that matters became worse because the dragon lost its place in the religious realm? I mean, is it true that matters became worse from the dragon standpoint? Because it was, in other words, when the emperors couldn't any longer decide the issues in the church, the Pope did it, did matters become worse on the earth?
Brother, how many? They became extremely worse because no other form of government or no other organization ever persecuted or killed or tortured as many people as
That's right. They became worse, but they didn't become worse because of the dragon. They became worse because of the man-child. This one that sat in the temple of God made it worse for the inhabitants of the earth. They said, woe unto the inhabitants of the earth. You see, they were blaming it on the dragon. Oh, but now it's going to be tough for you because the dragon is down in the earth and he's cast out of heaven and he's angry, you see, because he can't influence us and our decisions in the church. But they became worse for the world, all right, but not because of the dragon. The dragon didn't make it any worse. There's nothing in history to show that that this proclamation was an accurate one. It's a counterfeit, as I see it, all the way through. This proclamation, they say, that now has come salvation and strength in the kingdom of our God. Well, who was their God? It was their Papa, who sitteth in the temple of God, who showeth himself that he is God. That's the one that his kingdom had come on the power of his Christ. And the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And then they refer to the faithful of the past. They don't say that we overcame him, the ones making this proclamation. You'll notice that too in this account. The 11th verse, they say, and they, not we, and they overcame them. They're referring to the martyrs of the past. You know, the church is a great one to glorify the martyrs, and they say, well, these are our fathers. They were the ones that built the church and so on. But those were the pagan martyrs. They weren't the ones that overcame this dragon. No, it was Michael that overcame this dragon and cast him to the earth. But they didn't destroy the dragon. This dragon lived on. Now, in the 13th verse, it says, when the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, you see, the proclamation says that it's woe unto the earth, but actually, the record says that it's woe unto who? Who would the dragon really make trouble for?
Inhabitants.
Woman. It's a woman. Notice that. They said, woe to the... This is a counterfeit proclamation. It says now, woe unto the earth because the dragon has come down to you having great wrath, you know, and he's mad because he can't rule the church as he once did. So on, it's going to be tough for you now because he's angry. But it didn't work out that way. But really, the one that it became bad for, it became worse for, was the woman. The dragon was angry at the woman. Because this woman was the one that, from which the man-child had developed, had emerged. Not that she was directly responsible, but just the same. It was as though he were putting the blame on the woman because of what had happened, that he had lost the sovereign control of the church. And so it's woe really unto the woman in actuality, even though the proclamation says woe unto the inhabitants of the earth. All right, now, as to this woman, I think we have very good parallels on this. What are the 1260 days here?
1260 days from 539 to
1799. Yes. And do we have any parallel scriptures to substantiate this? In other words, is this an isolated incident of 1260 days which we have to struggle with to find out who it represents? You know, this clue here, this 1260 days is a key, as it were, to the sequence of events.
The thing, though, that
is
the time happened.
Yes, it occurs, I don't know, maybe three times in Revelation.
11:11?
Yes, that's one of them. If you have it, read it.
42 months, and it's 3.5 months, too, I think.
3.5 years.
3.5 years.
Yeah. All right. Brother Stewart?
Just talking about the two witnesses who were dead in the streets of the city. And after 3 days and a half, the Spirit of life from God entered into them, and they stood upon their feet, and great fear fell upon them which saw them.
Of course, that is days. We'd have to translate days for a year, and the years into days again to get 1260 on it, wouldn't we? Well, all right, but there are places where we do have 1,260, well, not just that way, but there's 3.5 years. Remember Elijah? How long was he in the wilderness where he was had a place prepared of God? Yeah, that's right. Elijah, remember, this is a parallel, see? And a parallel study is really, I think, the key to understanding Revelation. God's mind is parallel. His thoughts run concisely. They don't just crisscross every which way. But you'll find that God's mind is very orderly. And you'll find that in God's plan, everything has its place. And the time dispensations on the chart, you remember, there were the dispensations. They were at cutoff periods. You'll find that he had the parallel planes of creation. Where you have different natures, you'll see that everything in God's plan is just that orderly. It doesn't slant up and down and curve which way around, but you'll find that God's thoughts are running parallel cycles. No matter which one you're treating, you'll find there are parallel lines this way or this way. And this is a parallel. The 1260 years, it couldn't be two different times. It's the same period of time. In other words, we couldn't find two places in history where there would be these variations in time periods. But it was one given 1260 year period, and we know that it started in 539 AD and it ended in 1799. That was the time in which the dragon was cast down to the earth, as it were, or in that time, whether it was exactly on that day or whether it was in 800, we can't be exactly too sure, but it's after he was cast to the earth that he made war with the woman. But chances are it started in 539. That would take the 1260 years in which the woman fled into the wilderness, and probably she was persecuted in wrath by the dragon during that time. Maybe it was shorter. I don't know when the persecution of the woman, whether it lasted exactly 1260 years or not, but generally that is the picture. So during this time, remember, Michael is reigning. Where's the woman?
In the wilderness.
He's in the wilderness. Now in the true reign of Christ, how's it going to be? Where is the woman going to be, the true woman, the true bride of Christ?
On the throne.
She'll be. Paul says to the brethren in Corinth, he says, I would that you were reigning, he says, because if you were, I would be reigning with you. You're not going to reign without me, and I'm not going to reign without you. We're all going to reign together when the mediatorial reign of Christ begins on the earth. And here is a case where Michael, if we say that it represents the true Christ, is reigning, but he's reigning without his church, which doesn't fit. There's an inconsistency here which leads us to the idea that it is a counterfeit claim. All right, then it had two wings of a great eagle. What were the two wings of the great eagle?
The All the New Testament.
That's right. There were the scriptures that supported the woman in this wilderness condition. And we find that that was had a large part to do with the sustenance of the church as they were persecuted and hunted and so on. And even here, it's a general picture. Now, there were really, in fact, there were many faithful, loyal children of God that existed in the church, in the nominal church. They were there throughout the whole period. All the reformers, most all the reformers, with the exception of Peter Waldo, arose from within the church. They were usually men that were consecrated priests of the church and so on, that finally saw the inconsistencies of it. They were consecrated devout men that saw the inconsistencies of the church and tried to reform it. They didn't become saints after the Reformation that they started, but they were saints who tried to reform the church. They were in the church, many of them. Most of them started off that way, trying to reform it, with the exception of, Arius, he was in the church, too, and others were in the church, but we know that later there were exceptions. The Laodicean messenger, he left the church, and he didn't try to reform it. All right, now is there any questions on this matter up to this point?
Brother Jimmy,
Brother Hummel?
I got this one question a while ago. I'd like to know the difference between a pagan government and a civil government.
What's the difference between the pagans and the civil?
Brother Jean, in the times of pagan Rome, the government was more than civil. It was religious too. The emperor was the religious ruler as well as the civil ruler. He was the Pontifex Maximus, the highest priest.
That's right, and in pagan Rome, at that time, we think of it as pagan because at that time they had pagan religions. They were the religions of the state. And it was Christianity that was, as it were, the off-breed religion. And you were somewhat persecuted, and sometimes very much persecuted, if you held to Christianity. But I don't think that the picture really has its setting so much in pagan Rome as we have to give it the definition of civil Rome, because this beast is not a short-lived creature. It's still living today, and we can't say that pagan Rome as such, as it once was, is still on the scene. But we see that civil Rome, that civil power of Rome, even though paganism has maybe been somewhat absorbed in the churches, that's true, but we'd have to extend meanings a little bit to call Rome throughout all these seven successions of government pagan. Well, in other words, the pagan religions of Rome, with all their many gods that they had, has disappeared, and it's been, what hasn't been cast off has been absorbed into Christianity.
Well, Brother Dean, I have another question there. Would we say then that the forms of government that they have, for instance, in Germany, of which I know, say up to 1924, maybe after that, I wasn't there after that, but at that time they had a state, the church and state, they were one. The state decreed whatever the church was to teach, I think. Now, I don't, as far as I know, they taught Christianity. There was no heathen worship, no heathen religion. But would we say that there's a difference between that sort of government and old pagan Rome?
Well, I think that there is. Pagan Rome had its pagan religion. That's why we call it pagan Rome. It was civil, too. I mean, it was a civil government, but they endorsed other religions than Christianity. They had multitudinous gods, all kinds of them. And, well, what is it? Paul, remember, sermon on Mars Hill? They even had one to the unknown god in case they overlooked one. That was paganism. They had no one concept of religion. It was all really philosophy is what it was, and superstition.
Well, I may ask another question. The church in England, is that kind of a state religion?
Well, yes, it is. Theoretically, the Evangelical Church of England, the Episcopal or whatever it is its head is, what is it, the Queen? Or the King, whoever is in power. So it's a tool of the state. But, of course, that doesn't enter into this picture. This is dealing with the civil Rome, and while Britain may at times have been in those 10 toes and so on, that's a separate thing. The Church of England isn't particularly shown in this woman. That's something we'll get into in the next chapter of Revelation, Church of England. All right, is there everyone fairly well satisfied as far as we've gone? Well, we'll just go a little more and then we'll end our study. We'll read from the 15th verse through the 17th. Will somebody read that, please? Alpha or Debbie, do you have it? 12, 15 to the end.
And the serpent cast out his mouth with water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause it to be carried away with flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon was wroth with the woman, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God, and have the testimony of Jesus Christ.
Yes. Now, this brings us to the end of the times and time and a half of time. A time, you know, is 360 days. A time, and then two times makes three times, and a half of time makes three and a half times, which is 3.5 years in simple language. But that's the way the Bible is written, so we have to, we just have to struggle along with it that way. All right, now, at the end of the 3.5 times, or the 1260 years, you know, Ezekiel tells us that I have appointed thee a day for a year. At the end of this 1260-year period, remember, Elijah came out of the wilderness, and likewise this woman apparently comes out of the wilderness. And then it is that the dragon especially becomes concerned with this woman. And he casts out of his mouth a flood of water. And he has an objective in mind. Now remember, this all takes place still. Michael is still in heaven, and he's still supposed to be ruling and power of God and Christ. But notice the woman has been in the wilderness, and now she's emerging out of it, and she's still having trouble with the dragon. And nothing about the world here having a hard time with the dragon so much. It's the woman that's having a tough time with this dragon, according to the record. I'm just trying to point out the incongruity here of the proclamation. The proclamation says it's woe unto the inhabitants of the earth, but the facts show that it's woe unto the woman. That's what emerges in the study of this matter, to show that this must be a spurious reign, and it's not even a truthful proclamation. Isn't that right? If the record was right, then we should go on to show how the dragon makes trouble for all inhabitants of the earth. Woe unto the inhabitants of the earth, he's come down to you having great wrath. The record should follow showing how the dragon begins to make things difficult for the inhabitants of the earth. But it doesn't. It shows how he is angry with a woman. She has to flee into the wilderness. Finally, by God's grace, she emerges again. And then that brings us to what time? At the end of the 1260 years. When is that? 1799, that's right. Starting in 539 to 1799 is 1260 years. That's the time that Elijah comes out of the wilderness in type. And that's the time where this woman, or that is an antitype, and that is the time when this woman, an antitype, comes out of the wilderness. All right, what happened about this time? What happened? This flood of water that the dragon produced.
French Revolution.
Yes, the French Revolution came about, and not only was it a, well, it was a religious, it was a political revolution too. But what happened especially in France? Besides the revolution, there was a lot of new concepts, as it were, of thinking and so on. What happened in about that time?
The beginning of the Revolution was kind of changed the way of thinking in those days.
Well, there were many, as it were, atheists. France exalted reason without God. They had a God of reason set up, as it were, in France. That was the time of Robespierre and all these heathen, they're not heathen, but atheists that were bringing out truths, all right. They were exposing religion and so on, but in this flood, they were bringing out so much light, it was really the idea of making the religion, that is, this, it was the idea behind it was to put these reformed religions in a bad light. That was the whole idea. See, this is what happens, you see. This is what happens when you leave the Mother Church. You get all these various ideas and so on. And the idea behind this flood of waters was to get people disgusted with this reformed endeavor, with Christianity as it had become popular throughout Europe in the various reformed groups. And the idea was to discredit it as a whole in the minds of the people. And the idea, of course, behind it all was to destroy this woman class, the part that represented the right-hearted members of the church. We can't say the woman here represents just the faithful saints. That isn't the true picture. It represents a right-hearted group of the Lord's people, because the saints have never been just pictured that much alone. They've always been kind of a mixed group, but this represents the right-hearted among the Lord's people. And when the dragon cast forth this flood of knowledge, and it was calculated to make people disgusted with all the variations in religion, what happened?
You're the source of that information.
Yes, that's right. The time was just right. See, that's where Satan made a big mistake. Now, we've said that this dragon represents the civil powers, but remember, Satan is the god of this world, and that's why it speaks of the serpent. Satan has controlled the civil powers. He's had his henchmen in the civil governments as well as in the church. And what we see taking place in the world has always been, usually, through the manipulation of Satan himself. It was the serpent, you know, that gets the credit for this. Through the dragon, through the civil powers, Satan has been working. And in, the devil himself was behind it all. But he permitted this flood of knowledge to come, and to his surprise, he made a mistake. The results were altogether opposite to what he intended. Instead of destroying the woman, drowning the woman, and affecting her adversely, why, the earth received it. They were glad for this information. It was long overdue, they thought. So they appropriated it, and consequently, things have never been the same since. It's this flood of knowledge that came in was a great mistake, you see. Satan made a mistake in dealing with light, you know, because he's a child of the darkness, and when he begins to deal with light, he doesn't know how to handle it, and that's where he made one of his mistakes. He let a flood of knowledge come out, and knowledge and light are things that go pretty hard with Satan's dark arrangement. And the earth was glad for this. And so consequently, instead of it destroying the woman, we see that this Reformation and all the truths that were brought forth really helped to make better conditions in the world. The world appropriated this information, and it brought about certain reforms that really helped the woman. It made her life, as it were, more pleasant for a while. Since the days of the French Revolution, we have found greater freedom in religion and in thought. But Satan, the serpent, through the civil powers, becomes all the more incensed. He was defeated on this matter, and after this French Revolution fails, the dragon doesn't give up, does he? That isn't the last you hear of the dragon. It says that he goes to do what? And who is the remnant of her seed? Well, we are the remnant of her seed. We are the remnant of this early church class, this right-hearted church class. See, he isn't finished. He isn't licked yet. Don't think that this meant Satan was, as it were, giving up the struggle. But he says he goes to make war with the remnant of her seed. And he's waiting his chance to deal some type of death blow to the woman. Isn't that right? That's where this 12th chapter leads the dragon, as it were, in this account. And the only time the dragon is mentioned is two times. Once in the next chapter, that is where we see the dragon given to the leopard-like beast, this beast, he gives this beast, his seat, power, great authority. That's what the dragon does. Now, he made war with the man-child, but he gives his seat and his authority to this leopard-like beast. Now, that'll be our study next week. Or not next week, but I think it'll be... I don't know how convenient it'll be. That's going to be the problem with this, is to try to find a date that everyone can get to without interfering with conventions and Bible students' activities. But I was thinking of the last Saturday of the month. See, the 21st is Staten Island. Next week is tracting. Many of us are going to be tracting, helping Staten Island out. There's going to be an evening meeting there, so we don't want to interfere with that. But the last Saturday of the month, I think, is open, with the exception of a committee meeting, which I think we can arrange to hold at an earlier hour.
We're having a meeting at our house on that day.
Oh, on that Saturday?
Yeah, Frank Shalou is coming over.
On a Saturday? I thought it was Friday.
No, I think it's Saturday, yeah. Only on vacations he can come on Friday when Rusty isn't in school. But Rusty's back in school, it'll be Saturday, 28th.
27th.
Mm-hmm. So we'll be competing with one another.
Well, in that case, then, we'll just have to either...
have it a week later.
Well, there's two conventions after that.
Oh.
There's Jersey City and there's Buffalo.
Oh.
So.
And then Groton.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, this is difficult time to see him. But, well, I don't know what we'll do about that. We'll discuss that
later. Maybe we can discuss it. Maybe we could cancel our meeting or have it some other time. A week, we can have our meeting a week later. Well, Frank Stu doesn't like to come Friday. Unless he comes without Rusty and his wife.
Well, just in conclusion, one thing we fail to note, and that is that this dragon, one of the dissimilarities about it is it's a drakon in the Greek. It's a apparently a lizard-type animal. It's not a mammal that has fur and gives birth by carrying its young. It's apparently it's in the lizard arrangement. So that's a distinction between it and the other beasts of Revelation. And also, of course, we mentioned that this dragon comes up in the 13th chapter of Revelation, and it also comes up in Revelation 16. So what it really amounts to, this dragon, what we've started studying now, is all introductory. It all leads up to other parts in Revelation. See, this is all more or less just getting you familiar with background, leading up to the time in which the dragon tries to conclude his war against the remnant of her seed, in which he tries to destroy, in his final attempt, the church. See, this is all related. It doesn't just stop there at the 12th chapter. It goes on to the 16th, and it goes on to the 19th, although it isn't stated there just that way. But in the 19th chapter, the dragon is very definitely on the scene, represented in the kings of the earth and their army. There's the dragon, although it isn't called that, but it's still on the scene. And just before we close, I'd like to show you some of the other drawings that we have so you can keep them in mind. This is your dragon. This is the leopard-like beast. In the background, you'll see the two-horned beast. This is a picture that you find in Revelation 19th chapter, where the beast, the kings of the earth and their armies, make war against the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And the beast is taken, that's this beast here, the leopard-like beast, and guess who's with him in the background? The false prophet. That's the two-horned beast, and the kings of the earth and their army. Don't let anyone tell you that the church is not going to have supporters from the civil powers up until the end comes. Because Revelation, the 19th chapter, makes it so clear up until the time that the beast is cast alive into the lake of fire, she has as her allies, the kings of the earth and their armies, to make war against the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. That's a very strong picture, the one that we can't escape. We can't rule the church and the state working together out of this picture. And that is the false church, the false church. That beast. Now, this is another beast. In two horns, beast. And we were supposed to have another one. We will have before it's done. Let me picture of the scarlet colored beast. And just hearing that, and the people something to come back to see. So, try to remember in the meantime to keep these beasts separate. That when we talk about a dragon and a two-horned beast and a leopard-like beast and a scarlet-colored beast, there won't be any confusion.
Say, Gene, I made a mistake on that. It's Friday night we have our meeting.
Oh.
On the 26th, I think. So Saturday will be open.
It will be then. All right. Yeah.